into order. If we can have a roll call, please.
Mr. Kropinski? Mr. Hawley?
Here.
Mr. Dougherty?
Here.
Mr. McColdrick?
Here.
Ms. DePasquale?
Here.
Dr. Zuzalak? Mr. Jaska?
Here.
Ms. Majewski?
Here.
Mr. Curtis? Mr. Neff?
Here.
Ms. Walter?
Here.
Mr. Barrymore?
Here.
Mr. Morale?
Here.
Pursuant to Section 5 of the Open Public Meetings Act, this meeting has been duly advertised in accordance with law by publication in the official newspapers of the borough and by posting in Borough Hall by the borough clerk as part of the annual notice. This meeting is a quasi-judicial proceeding. Any comments or questions must be limited to issues that are relevant to what the board may legally consider in reaching a decision. Decorum appropriate to a judicial hearing must be maintained at all times. We'll stand now for a silent prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll open the floor for any public comment for items which are not on this evening's agenda. Hands up on Zoom.
No hands raised.
Seeing none. Pending litigation.
Pleased to report there is none.
Outstanding. Any other business? We do have a little bit of other business. Only take a second. First of all, I just want to thank everybody for coming, accommodating this special meeting. I know, particularly this time of year, it's not always so easy, but we're very grateful for you doing that. And also, we'll revisit this at the July meeting. We noticed when the calendar came out in January that the October meeting falls on a Jewish holiday. I can't remember which one, but it's a major Jewish holiday. We did make an attempt to move that meeting, but with the schedule in the borough and the availability of this room, it just wasn't possible. So personally, I feel like we made every effort, but we just couldn't move it, so we're going to stick to the original schedule. So we'll make that announcement again at the July meeting. And with that, if we could have a motion to adjourn the workshop meeting.
I'll make a motion to adjourn the workshop meeting.
I'll second. Majewski.
All in favor?
Aye.
We'll call this special meeting to order. If we could have a roll call, please.
Mr. Kropinski? Mr. Hawley?
Here.
Mr. Dougherty?
Here.
Mr. McColdrick?
Here.
Ms. DePasquale?
Here.
Mr. Zulak? Mr. Jaska?
Here.
Ms. Majewski?
Here.
Mr. Curtis? Mr. Neff?
Here.
Ms. Walter?
Here.
Mr. Barrymore?
Here.
Mr. Harala?
Here.
Thank you very much. And on to the reason that we're here. We will now have a presentation and discussion about the Housing Plan Element and Fair Share Plan by Mr. Peter Bandicoy, who is with us this evening.
And Mr. Chairman, before we start that, I should place on the record that we have received communication from the attorney, Jessica Almeida, who is the Affordable Housing Council for Borough, confirming that they had sent out the appropriate notices for this meeting regarding the Housing Element Fair Share Plan.
Very well.
Thank you. Just a question before we start about this whole process. Is this similar to the process that we had, obviously different content, but for the stormwater like review and also like the, I don't know, like the downtown like densification and everything? No. Like, are we, so we're reviewing it, but are we offering comment? Are we, you know, what is our role here?
Well, there's going to be a presentation as to the Housing Element Fair Share Plan, which is a requirement under the Fair Housing Act as it currently stands. And the borough is required to adopt a master plan amendment, which is in the fourth round,
housing element of fair share plan.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't use, you add a word to that that I don't, but it, whatever. housing plan element of fair share plan, I think is your terminology, but I'm in a different universe.
It's all good.
But in any event, the borough has to adopt that, which is a two-stage process. First, this board is going to hear tonight, and then presumably, and have discussion from the public as it's offered, and then hopefully adopt the fair share plan that has been submitted, so that the governing body can then also endorse it, because they have to endorse it before the 30th in order to be in line with the Fair Housing Act requirements. If we don't get that done, then we lose our immunity from builders' remedy actions and lawsuits. So that's the consequences if we don't get this done.
Yes, okay, understood.
Which is why I thought it was important to just seeing what the docket looked like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Looking at May, June, July, and knowing that we had to have this, our portion completed and given to mayor and council to formally adopt before the 30th. That's a rigid timeline. So that, like, if I was seeming a little bit crazy about, like, you know, we gotta have quorum, we're gonna do this. If I'd have known that everybody was gonna bail on us, that I'd be back and take care of it then, but like, I just didn't want to roll those dice. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, okay. So that's why we're here.
Yeah, thank you.
If I could just add also, so the last remaining mayor and council meeting of the month of June is this coming Monday.
Yeah.
So that's an element to this as well. So hopefully, if all goes well this evening, the mayor and council will endorse this plan
okay.
at Monday's meeting.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Sure.
And Mr. Vandenhoort is here. Please raise your right hand and be sworn to me to swear affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding will be the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
And just tell them, we'll put on the record your name and address so that it's there.
Peter Vandenhoort, with Acuity Consulting Services, licensed professional planner in the state of New Jersey, and I'm here tonight to present the fourth round housing plan element and fair share plan. Would you like me to dive right into the presentation at this
Please.
Point? Thank you. And I appreciate everyone taking the time for a special meeting as well. I know it's challenging over the summer more than most times of the year. So I just have a brief presentation, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions. Essentially, I appreciate Councilman Doherty assisting with the presentation as well. So if you wouldn't mind, I'll just jump right into the next slide.
Yes.
And so basically, the housing plan element and fair share plan, it's got two chapters. And the first is the housing plan element, which comes from the municipal land use law in part, but it's also recognized in the Fair Housing Act. And essentially that, you know, so there's a tie into the municipal land use law, but then for the Fair Housing Act in particular, the fair share plan portion, which is more along the lines of a strategy of what they call mechanisms, which are really just projects and programs to address the obligation. That is the second half of the document. I'll take a quick walkthrough of the document, particularly focusing on the projects and just the highlights. It's a relatively large report. I don't want to bore anyone with the details, but again, happy to answer any questions. But it's essentially, the fair share plan is really where the council comes in, and because there's ordinances associated with that. And we have a few of the ordinances that we've recognized in this document, but the state has put such a compressed timeline on us that we haven't had a chance to adopt all the ordinances, and the legislation did kind of foresee that. So we have until next March to actually adopt all the ordinances, which is great. But at any rate, some existing ordinances are included in the fair share plan, just to kind of do what we could at this point. And I'll provide, like, you know, a few highlights about that portion, but mainly it's all about the projects at this point. So I'll you know, give you some additional detail about that. And as Mr. Stieb had commented, you know, unfortunately, the way the state's framework is set up for this, there is, you know, the motivation of lack of immunity would create risk in terms of you know, being open to builder remedy litigation and things like that. So that's unfortunately something we have to live with here. But we're well on track. It's a compliant plan. You've actually done a great job, which I'll get into as far as like compliance up to this point, and we're in a great position going forward. So next slide, please. So the state last year, I believe it was last March, enacted updates to the Fair Housing Act, which have been implemented. We had some annual reporting that's been due last fall and again this spring, and each February 15th, we'll have to revisit that and do some annual reporting. And then one of the other deadlines was in January. There was a resolution adopted that actually recognized the obligations that NJDCA had released, I believe, in October. So that step's been done. That really is kind of the initial step for this process that we're here for today. And essentially the next deadline after that is June 30th, where you would have to have this plan adopted by, and there's a little sort of fine print there. Within 48 hours of this hearing, we actually have to upload this report, signed version of it, along with the resolution to the program. And the program is the terminology for a court program that they've established for this. It used to be under NJDCA alone, and they've kind of divvied it up where NJDCA is doing the annual monitoring and the spending plan oversight, and then the court's actually going to be the body that comments on the plan. They've hired consultants to assist them with that, and are actually going to have a mediation process, from what I understand. And so just, I guess, just to round it out, so we submit on by June 30th. We would have uploaded well before then, you know, within 48 hours of tonight, potentially. And from July 1st through August 31st, there's a 60-day, like, essentially public comment period or comment period where developers could theoretically, you know, initiate a complaint. I'm not sure what the correct terminology is for this round, but they could be an intervener. I know that was one of the terms for the third round. And in contrast to the last rounds, where they could just try to say that their site is better than another site we have in the plan, they would have to actually essentially make a convincing argument that there's a major defect in the plan, and which is why their project should be included within it. And I think we've got a pretty solid plan at this point. Doesn't prevent anyone from making those types of claims, so we can kind of see between now and August 31st. And then if there's no comments, it kind of continues on where by March of 2026, we would adopt the ordinances. If there's a complaint, it could get off on a slightly separate timing track. But again, it's a mediation process, so they wouldn't necessarily be able to do any builder's remedy or anything like that. It would be a conversation with the judge mediating everything. So just to give you real quick highlights of the process going forward. And next slide, please. I should probably go for one more. Thank you. So this is a summary of the obligations and what you have here. Just real quick, it's kind of the unusual obligation among all the other things that you see on this page. The first row, present need, that is the rehabilitation obligation. And each round, every 10 years, it just resets. And I'm trying to recall what it was last round, but let's say, I think it was on the order of 30 units or so, let's say, even hypothetically, even if you didn't do all 30 as of July 1st of this year, when the fourth round starts, it resets to zero. And so in this case, the borough has been assigned a rehabilitation obligation of zero. We've been reliant on the county's program in large part, which is great. A lot of towns are doing that. What we've included in the plan is to continue to do that. And so basically, we would look to Monmouth County to continue its program. We have to establish a rental rehabilitation program that's a counterpart to that, and that's like the local component. And just to give you the background on that, my experience with that is, you know, we would adopt a manual and, you know, get the word out on it through some local advertising announcements at local meetings. But the rental rehabs tend not to pencil out very well. And I've actually been doing this for 22 years. I haven't seen a rental rehab project get off the ground. We might have some inquiries, but nevertheless, it's in the legislation, so we have to at least make it available. So we're going to be fully compliant as far as the rehabilitation obligation is concerned. Next, you have the prior round obligation.
Just interrupt you for a second, just to try and simplify for the board members. There's two components of your obligation. Yeah. One is what has just been discussed, which is the rehabilitation component. And that's where we look at where they look at it and say, are there units within the town, affordable housing units, that are that need a rehabilitation, that are basically not up to speed and need significant rehabilitation? In this case, it has now been determined that your number is zero. You don't need any, you have no rehabilitation obligation in this municipality. The second, which Peter is about to discuss, is the new unit obligation, which is how many units do they think we should be able to create before 2035, which is going to be interestingly similar.
Yes, thank you for that, and that's actually a really, really important point to rehab. Just to provide a little extra background, it deals with major building systems, overcrowding, housing that's in need of renovation essentially. And so it's good that it's zero. It's actually, that's a good thing. It is rolling, so like if housing's 50 years or older, I believe it's eligible. So like fast forward 10 years, the housing that's now 40 years old would be 50 years old. If there's improvements needed, there's a chance, and that's why the number fluctuates. It gets reset every 10 years. But yeah, the other obligations, essentially everything else that you see on the page, are the new construction obligations. And what you had for the 1987 to 1999 time period was an 86 unit obligation assigned by the state. For the third round, from 1999 to 2025, 207 units. And then for the fourth round, it's 48 units. And what was done in the third round and what we've done again here is we've done a vacant land adjustment. That's hugely beneficial because what it did for the third round, just starting there, is it took that 207 plus the 86, which is I think 293 or so, and it basically divided it into a realistic development potential, which is the portion of that obligation that you theoretically have the land today to see it constructed, and that's your realistic development potential, the RDP. The unmet needs, the other portion of that, and that is the portion where if an opportunity comes up for redevelopment, you know, if someone proposes a project, it doesn't necessarily have to be redevelopment in terms of the local and housing and redevelopment law, but it could be through zoning or otherwise. If you're able to see a project realized through a lot that's already got a building on it, for instance, if it's a demo rebuild or an expansion, that's what the unmet need kind of anticipates. And you don't have to meet the unmet need in terms of like every single unit as far as concrete planning, like being able to actually point to specific projects, which is great. The realistic development potential you do, and the borough has, and essentially I'll show the tables on that. So so essentially it was broken into 42 units and 251 units, and I'll give a little bit more detail about that in a moment. For the fourth round, we revisited that, and as you might imagine, if they went through every site in the third round and only found a small handful would be available for construction, it's kind of already spoken for every site in town. So unless you had another vacant property generated, you know, through demolition or otherwise between now and the last plan, it's going to be zero, basically. And that's, of course, what we found. We went through, we looked at the environmental constraints. There's some variability because if an environmental regulation changes, you could have sites that, you know, are additional sites that are unavailable. They rarely roll back the environmental regulations. So, you know, of course, none became available. So you have those kinds of variables. But what I think is a pretty good result in this case, which is what we were hoping to achieve, is an RDP of zero. So essentially, you don't have to have any specific projects. But in the what the legislation did in the Fair Housing Act is they have this clause in there that we're still trying to interpret. And myself as a planner, the attorneys, even the court masters are still, you know, kind of examining this. And it says that up to a minimum of 25% of the adjusted obligation must be addressed through areas likely to redevelop. And that's the little R. It's not the local redevelopment housing law. It just means, you know, areas with buildings on them that you couldn't, you know, count as generating an RDP. They want you to basically give them a good level of confidence that you have some type of zoning in place, whether it's an overlay zoning or something else that's going to at least provide an opportunity for those to develop. And so what we've done is we do have a few different projects that have been proposed, and I'll highlight those in a moment. Plus, you have your overlay zoning and your municipality-wide set-aside ordinance, and all of those count toward that 25%. So that's what we used. And they also happen to count toward your unmet need. It's just that the 25%, you do have to, like, basically show you can cover the full 25%. The unmet need, you don't have to show you have to cover the full number. So I'll get into that in a moment. And I guess next slide, please. And I covered a lot of this already, so the vacant land adjustment. Essentially what we did is we took data from the tax assessor's office. We took mapping from NJDEP, and really all we're required to do is use available mapping. DEP's mapping can be a little variable as far as what's actually wetlands and what's not and things like that. But in this case, we were able to rely on those sets of data. And as I had mentioned, generated an RDP of zero. And I think I have a map on the next slide. and also areas of steep slopes, and I know there's some areas that are prone to landslides in certain, you know, certain areas, so we're able to take those off as well. And then you can see some of the all the red areas are the sites that are like theoretically vacant. You can see some of them are literally piers out in the water, others are clearly road right-of-ways. So it captures everything, and you know, we're able to eliminate anything that doesn't make sense as far as, you know, it being not feasible to construct something there without a variance, for example. And then you can see the light blue area kind of on the left half of the map. Those are that's a flood zone, so any property in the flood zone, you're able to take that out. And so through that process of screening different properties, that's essentially how we got to the result of a zero unit RDP. Next slide. And I think we already covered this. This is just a real quick recap of the present need, also known as the rehabilitation obligation of zero units. Just kind of reiterating that we're planning on relying on the Monmouth County Home Improvement Program. And next slide. And so this is the prior and third round combined realistic development potential. And as you can see in the right-hand column, all the projects are fully constructed, which is really the strongest position you can be in. It's actually a great situation to be in. And then, of course, on the left-hand column, you have the project names. And essentially, we didn't really have to, you know, try to dissect or change the third round plan. And sometimes you might have a project that falls out, and then you have a shortfall. Then you have to go back. You have to find units of generally of the same type to try to replace it. And you have to, like, demonstrate that your numbers actually meet all the different criteria, and it's, I don't want to bore you with the details, but it's more than just getting to 42. You have to show a certain number of family rental units, a certain number of very low income units, all these different things. In this case, your third round plan is concrete. All your projects were constructed. We're able to leave that intact, and our position is that it's a valid plan. It's still completely, it holds water, and it's a completely defensible plan at this point. And next slide, please. And your unmet need for the third round and prior rounds, as I mentioned before, it's 251, but you don't have to, in the case of unmet needs, show all 251 units specifically. You can just provide some general, what they call mechanisms, aka projects and programs. And in this case, there's 47 age-restricted units that were left over from Spring Point. The reason that those weren't applied to the RDP is that you have a senior cap of a 30% in the fourth round, 25% in the third round. So in other words, of your RDP, you can only address up to 25% of it with age-restricted units. So, but thankfully, you can roll those over. They can be applied to unmet need. And so that's what's been done. And again, this is already in your third round plan, so we didn't alter it. In the third round plan, the existing set-aside ordinance and the borough-wide mandatory set-aside ordinance and the zoning-specific one and the borough-wide one, they were proposed for some amendments. Those amendments have taken place. They're actually in your ordinance, so you followed through. It's fully compliant, you know, from an ordinance standpoint, which is great. And so those are the general mechanisms that apply toward the 251. And next slide, please. And so this is the fourth round component. So this is the new stuff as far as this plan is concerned. And what you have are three different projects, and then really just a kind of reiteration of the general set-aside ordinances. And in this case, you have Carton Brewery conversion, Harborside conversion. I believe conceptual plans have been proposed. This plan is subject to an amendment, you know, as far as the process goes. I don't want to, like, give the impression that you're you know, being painted into a corner or anything like that. So as the applications come forward, as additional details come out, because it's still subject to probably some verification of site conditions and things like that. So there could be some, you know, some variability in the outcome. But for now, the information we have is that these conversions would potentially yield two affordable units as a set aside of, I believe they're on the order of around 10 units or so each. And 65 First Ave, from what I understand, is under construction. And that would yield three family rental units, three affordable units. What we've done here to be conservative, in the bonus credits column, we've provided an asterisk. Basically, we're reserving the right in the plan to take bonus credits in the future. And so that's something that I'm fairly confident, I don't know if they're going to grant bonus credits for projects that aren't constructed, so that's why we took that position. But upon construction, and again, there's annual monitoring each year, we can kind of demonstrate they've been constructed. And then, you know, if there's a plan amendment sometime over the next 10 years or fast forward 10 years, we can claim bonus credits for those. So that's what the asterisks are referring to, and I apologize, I meant to put a footnote for those. And for the existing set-aside ordinance and the borough-wide set-aside ordinance, again, we're really just, we need to demonstrate we get to 25%, and the obligation is 48. So 25% of 48 is 12, and basically the position that we've taken here is that you have 7 units from the projects, 5 units from, we just claimed them from the zone-specific set-aside ordinance. That gets you to 12, and then in the text of the plan, it actually goes on to say there's, it's anticipated and estimated that there's substantially more units that these set-aside zones would generate. We're just basically demonstrating that we can meet the 25%. And then the other 36 of the 48 in the plan itself, it's essentially taken the position that those mechanisms, the overlay zone and the set-aside ordinance apply to the unmet need and sufficiently satisfy the unmet need for the borough. And I think there might be one more slide. And then this is really just for reference. So this is the affordable housing sites map, which is required as per the legislation. And we've really just mapped the sites. And I think that's those are the highlights of the plan. I think that's essentially all I have. Be happy to take any questions.
Yeah, on the first-time home buyer, $50,000 grant based on combined income, does any of that factor into this, if there's any in the municipality?
So for a first-time home buyer, one of the, that's a great question. So one of the next components is the set of ordinances, and that'll come along with that. And that's technically a manual, but it would be adopted by resolution. And what we could do is we could prepare a affordability assistance manual, or if one's already existing, we could update it. And essentially, your trust funds, you could earmark, and I think it's required actually that 30% of the trust fund money be applied toward affordability assistance. It's entirely up to the borough as to which programs you want to include. First-time homebuyer program is very common. So it's certainly a great program. It's got a good track record. It's well-tested. So that's something that, you know, I would suggest that we probably want to leave, if it's already in place, leave it on the books for now, and you could still implement it if, you know, if it's already on the books. One of the main reasons for saying that, I guess there's two reasons. One is that we have a little time as far as adopting the ordinances, and there's a chance there might be some cross-referencing between documents, so we'd want to, like, get the others in place and make sure everything is comprehensive. And the other thing is, which, of course, with all this other stuff going on, they've decided to update the Uniform Housing Affordability Controls, which date back to 2006. It's supposed to be updated this fall, and that actually ties in with all the manuals. And so what the quartermasters are on board with at this point, from what we've heard, and what most if not all the planners are doing, is we're holding off on updates to the manuals until that hopefully happens this fall, just because we wouldn't want to waste any time or money, because basically we could go based upon today's regulations, but it's going to be a pretty significant update from what I understand. So we'd almost certainly be amending them.
After already of those already existing within the borough, when they got those grants, do you get credit for them? And how do we identify them or who notify us, not by name, but by property?
So for a first-time home buyer, we would track it. I mean, if some have been provided to date, we'd want to get the agreements for those. And then we'd want to track it if there's terms on those for repayment at a certain point, like if they got the grant and they didn't stay, like a common term might be 5 years. So you wouldn't want someone to come in, get the grant, and leave.
Did DCA or Housing or Urban Development notify us of what individual properties in each municipality if they got them?
The record keeping at the state, it's been. Yeah, we could. I would recommend if some have been on the books and we have the files from Affordable Housing Alliance. We're still kind of digging into the details. I don't think they included those. So if some of those are on the books.
We could the same as the Habitat houses, which we have 2 years.
Yeah, we have some files on the Habitat houses, which is great. We would want to track those, as it doesn't necessarily have to be my firm. It could be if you have some staff in place, but we would want to make sure that there's terms of an agreement that someone can't just get a grant and sell 6 months later and you know, just pocket the money essentially. So if there's any terms to those, I'd definitely be interested in reviewing them.
Well, it's the same thing with first-time homebuyers. It's restricted for 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, so exactly. And just to answer the other part of your question, there's no credit. Like, we wouldn't gain or lose any credit for those. In terms of like actual like credits toward the obligation, but you are spending your affordability assistance money, which is good because the state still included the language in the legislation. If you don't use your money within 4 years, theoretically they could try to take the funding, and so that kind of keeps it, you know, you're, I guess what's it, first in, first out, something like that. So we could take that position on those funds.
I have a question. For, like, let's say, just example, the Carton Brewery conversion, right? When they come, I'm guessing how this is enforced is when they come before the board and they want to make this conversion, right, of that property, does it go into, let's say they need a variance, right? Does it go into their variance that two of those units would have to be affordable housing? It's cemented here at the planning board?
Yeah,
it's a number of units, correct?
Yeah, essentially, you're yeah, absolutely right. What you'd want to do is Michael would probably put it in the resolution and clearly identify number of units, any other terms that are attached to that, and then what we'd ideally want to do, if it's not already set up this way, and I'm still kind of, you know, getting used to the processes, but we'd want the board to communicate to me that the units are approved, and then at that point we'd reach out to the developer. We want to stay ahead of it because most developers will like either reach out or ask questions, but occasionally they'll try to sneak under the radar, and the next thing you know,
yeah.
So that way we can kind of keep them. We can essentially maybe make it a condition of the resolution that they have to contact us. Otherwise, they might not get their building permit or CO or something like that. And
what dictates what's affordable?
So that would be it's got to be affordable to people making, households making 80% of the area median income, and each year HUD, you know, sends out numbers. The state's kind of, HUD does it by county, the state does it by three or four county area, so the state just does a quick calculation, basically averages it out among Monmouth, Ocean, and Mercer, in our case here, and we would make sure that we calculate their sales price, and the sales price is based on the HUD numbers, essentially, and the state's numbers.
So. Are the developers aware of this? The five developers that are listed?
They should be, yeah. I know the ones that I've spoken with. I haven't spoken with Carton or Harborside. I've spoken with Callion, and but I'd be happy to speak with like any or all of them, just a quick conversation. But they should be aware. I mean, their development team, it's kind of, they've hired them, and it's sort of their responsibility to inform the developer of these requirements as well.
So one more question. If I am, let's say I'm the owner of a property in town and I'm going to rent that property out, right? I'm not renting my house out, just for the record. But I'm just saying I want to rent that out and I want to rent it via affordable housing, low income. Does the town get credit for that property?
So
it's deed restricted.
Yeah, it's tricky thing is, and they've upped the deed restriction for the fourth round from 30 years to 40 years. So you'd have to agree for a 40-year reduced rent or
so that doesn't work.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay.
And what ends up happening, typically, there's a program called Market to Affordable. If you had like a foreclosure or something like that, and you could pick it up, you know, in some cases the municipality will buy it, in other cases they'll team with a nonprofit or otherwise. You can have individual homes come online like that, but it's usually subsidized basically through like either the municipality or a separate funding stream because it's expensive as you can imagine.
Any other questions from the board?
Yeah, I have a question. So like, you know, the three lots that we approved on Garfield, you know, from Italian, you know, do they have a contribution to the Affordable Housing Act? Like, is it, you know, a fund that's where the...
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah. They contribute not to have to participate? Yeah. Is that how that goes?
There's a threshold, and so they have to pay no matter what, essentially. if their project's under five units, I believe, you you're going to have them pay a residential development fee, and if they have commercial, they have to pay the 2.5% commercial fee. If they're over that, they should be providing units on site. So that's a great question.
Fireman's Field would be the same way.
Right.
And the McConnell track.
And, okay.
So does that count, like those dollars coming in, does that contribute to towards units unmet or monetarily?
Yeah, I mean, those dollars, it goes into the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, and then the borough gets to choose what programs. And there's a little, like I said, really the only thing that they kind of have like required at the state is 30% has got to be spent on affordability assistance. But again, that could be a wide variety of programs. And then beyond that, you can spend up to 20% to offset your consulting services. So like planning, legal, administration, things like that. But that's a maximum, not a minimum. So, you know, get be as efficient as we can there. And then the rest of it's completely open-ended. Since you don't have a rehab program, you've got pretty good amount of latitude. Like if there's a certain project, like let's say if there's a building in town that could use some help and a nonprofit is going to come in, typically you'd mostly only subsidize nonprofit projects. That might be a great use of your trust funds. So there's different types of opportunities that could come along.
So just say a developer that has an affordable housing unit, it doesn't mean that they get subsidized in any manner.
No, that's up to their private market financing, and theoretically they're getting a density bonus of some kind, which is sort of already included in your ordinance. So theoretically they're already getting their benefit.
So let's say the market tanks and we can't meet this number because we can't entice any development into town. What happens then?
You have essentially, since the vacant land adjustment showed the RDP of zero, you can rely on that. And unless, like if a large property becomes available, like let's say a large old building were demolished and then you had more RDP, you'd be in a little bit of a let's say more complicated situation at that point, but even that wouldn't be that complicated because if the borough would like, you know, you could just simply rezone that and include a requirement for affordable housing. And then you would be, once again, you'd be rock solid, you know, all around in that case, because you really, I mean, we want to see the units constructed, but the minimum bar is to provide a realistic opportunity for the construction of affordable housing. And in that case, if you zone for it, you're doing that, and then you're relying on the market from there.
So to just summarize in a very simple way, the plan's good. Like it's all thought out.
It's good. You're
never happens in my life.
No, you're in really good shape. And what I would say is like it's the only thing. And I had a meeting in Dumont in Bergen County last night. And they're in a similar situation. They've constructed all their units, and a lot of towns are in terms of like there's several smaller towns now that have constructed their units and they have a vacant land adjustment. If you're approaching build out, you know, that's like achievable, great pathway to take. And then what you have in common with a lot of the other towns is the unmet need. But you're in pretty good, like you're in really good shape, really, because like the unmet need, you have a compliant plan. And if a developer came in, you would have, you know, ideally, hopefully fast forward 6 months, a court judgment of repose showing that you're fully compliant. And so with the projects constructed, as long as the rest of these projects are constructed, you're in great shape. The developer can't say you're defaulting on your plan. And then you have the ability to negotiate, you know, when they come before the board and, you know, when they're before the governing body. So.
I do have a question. So along those lines, are you then able, if you did negotiate, if everything has been met for this fourth round, and a builder comes in, are you able to negotiate and then use that for perhaps another round or a different time?
So that's a great question. You potentially can, and the it's still sort of an open question at this point. So there's a chance through the annual monitoring that, and this is like anyone's guess at this point, they could say if a new project comes online, you've only calculated an RDP, you calculated an RDP of zero, we want to adjust that since you're having new projects come online. And they could kind of force us to count it toward this round. I think what we would probably do, I know it's like really confusing. So basically using Red Bank as an example. So in Red Bank, part of their settlement agreement last round, Fair Share Housing Center required that any project that came online had to count as additional RDP, even if it was like a site that already had a building on it, was being redeveloped, and it's just a position that they took. And I think part of their thinking was they didn't want the town to take a minimalist approach in the third round and roll everything toward the fourth round. So far, I haven't seen that, but it's possible, it's anyone's guess. But I would say, I think Plan A to me would be we continue with this plan, and unless we're told otherwise, I mean, if other projects come online, especially if they're going to be constructed closer to the fifth round, I think it's a really strong case to count them toward the fifth round. So it's something we can monitor that and see what they require.
Thanks.
So, good question.
Any other questions before we open it to the public? Mr. Fisher, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. McGoldrick. Mark Fisher, 91 Third Avenue. I'm going to be all over the place because I was jotting as this gentleman was speaking, but let's start off with what's an RDP?
So that's a realistic development potential, and that's essentially the capacity of the borough in terms of vacant land. It's whatever vacant land is available.
Okay. So before I came here tonight, I really tried to understand how we arrived at the 48 number. And I looked around at other towns, and I'm not going to get too deep into this. I gave some of you papers just to see how I was thinking. It just seems like 48 units in a 1.2 mile square town is an awful lot compared to many other towns that surround us. Unfortunately, Middletown wasn't in the county system to tell how many units they were obligated to build over the next 10 years, which I found surprising. Maybe it's because of litigation, I don't know, but Middletown was not on the county list as most of the other of the boroughs were. But it just seems like 48 is a lot. And I say that because in round three, right, we built a lot of buildings in the last 10 years. A lot of buildings. And I don't know how much I think it's what we have to have 20% affordable housing for each one of those, Mr. Stein? 20?
15 to 20.
Okay. So I'm confused with the term unmet obligation. I mean, if we have a number, let's say it's 200, and 10 years later, we didn't build 150 of them. I think you said that number zeroes out.
That number, the unmet need, it just kind of it's cumulative over the years, so it never goes away. The present need, the rehab obligation, that would zero out. In your case, there's actually it's a zero unit obligation, so it's almost like doesn't matter. Like for Atlantic Highlands for this 10 years, the rehab obligation zero. So even if it was 100, it would zero out in 10 years. It happens to be zero for the rehab obligation.
Okay, so,
yeah.
Did we build every unit we were supposed to in the last 10 years?
Yes. Yeah.
What was that number?
So that is, so we're talking about the third round in that case. And so the realistic development potential for the third round was 42.
Okay.
And so all 42 units have been constructed at this point. You have 42 credits.
So 42 units in the last 10 years, and we built a lot of buildings. Where are we going to build a lot of buildings in the next 10 years? I mean, they all took place along the First Avenue corridor, either tearing down buildings or building in empty lots. Where are these lots sure. now? And it's a higher number. So I don't understand how this calculation, this voodoo calculation that somebody's doing with the state, said, hey, you did such a great job for the last 10 years with all this available real estate. Well, now that you have no real estate, we're going to make the number higher. I don't understand how all these numbers work out.
Mr. Fisher, let me, no. That's fine.
That's so you're going to yell at me?
No. I want to try and simplify the voodoo.
Okay, good.
Okay. So the voodoo, very simply, is what is your number? And that number comes from a formula that is based for the most part on the Mercer County court decision that came out 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was, the Jacobson court decision, where they had a 40-day trial with experts saying, this is how we calculate the formula to come up with what the obligation is for towns. And for the most part, Department of Community Affairs, DCA, sort of took that and adopted that formula. And that's what they based the numbers on. So they put a number on you. Okay. So our number is what was it? 48.
48.
So the number they place on it, and there's three factors, and I can't, I'm not doing this day to day. But there's three factors that go involved in it has to do with income, it has to do with vacant land, it has to do with, I forget the third factor, but in any event, that all goes into this formula. And then they come up voodoo with the numbers, right? They then assign a number, so our number is 48. Then we look at it and they say, yeah, but we recognize that in certain circumstances, you can't make that number. So we're going to create exceptions. So the exception in this case, for you take Colsnack, the exception is what they call a durational adjustment because they have no infrastructure. They don't have water and sewer, so they can't do big projects. Here, you have no vacant land, so you have a vacant land adjustment. They say, yeah, the number's 48, but you don't really have the land out of cover because you've done a vacant land adjustment and shown us that you can't do it. So we're going to reduce your obligation to zero under the vacant land adjustment, but that number is still there, and we're going to make you provide certain zoning to try and come up with a number to give an opportunity for affordable housing to be developed. And that's what these little mechanisms that we've been talking about with Carton and with Harborside and these other things present opportunities. They may or may not come to fruition. If they don't come to fruition, at least we've planned to make that available. And if it doesn't, so what? We got zero.
The other thing I don't understand, too, is...
And Mr. Vandenkoy can correct me, because he knows more than I do about this, but I'm
no, you're,
trying
you're,
to make it...
You're exactly so right, yeah.
It's every municipality has to demonstrate that they're not only just willing to comply, but they're actively making an honest attempt that they can demonstrate to the state court that we understand what the directive is and this is what we are doing our best to do to achieve that. But if we don't, we're still at zero.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the unmet need, the larger number that's left over, you don't have to address every single unit with specific projects. You can just pass like an overlay ordinance or a general set-aside ordinance like the borough has. And those general approaches are considered enough because it's in some cases, and I was just thinking as we're talking here, like Ocean City has a third round unmet need, I think of about 1,000 units. And so it could be 70 years from now. I don't know if that's ever going to be achieved. But at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter in a sense because they're making an effort. They pass the ordinances. And so it's similar here. It's not as quite as extreme as that, but the ordinances are in place. So we've made the legally required effort. And so it's probably never going to be constructed in terms of the unmet need, but the borough is covered as far as what needed to be done.
You mentioned the word overlay like three times. What does that mean? I didn't think overlay zones were allowed.
So that is, it's just an additional type of zoning requirement. So like the borough-wide set-aside ordinance, in a sense, depending on how it's rolled out, it could be an overlay. It's an additional provision that applies to property if you're going to do certain things. You know, so if you're going to build, in that case, a residential development and have five or more units, then you're required to build an additional residence. I'd have to take a look at the ordinance to see if you're going to build a pharmacy. There's probably no requirement. So it's basically an additional set of requirements for certain types of uses.
I'll give you an example. A typical overlay zone would be perhaps you have a commercial area and you put an overlay that you can put residential above the commercial.
Or senior housing or something like we did.
Or whatever, and have an affordable component.
And the last thing, and I'll just keep this simple. You mentioned that in this round four, that you made adjustments for basically unbuildable land, the steep slope, probably Fireman's Field, wetlands that, you know, encroach on creeks or whatever. Why couldn't we have taken that credit in the third round?
I think it was at that point, at the third round's regulations are really similar to the ones that we're using now. So basically, for lack of a better way to put it, I think we kind of revisited what was done in a sense. We used the current information from the state though. So if they changed the regulation, it would be slightly different. But at this point, the third round, and I wasn't here at the time, but they should have done almost the same exact thing. And I think they eliminated all those sites at that point. And that's a big reason why this time around it came out to be zero instead of 42. So it was kind of already done in a sense, and we were sort of just double checking based on current regulations.
And post Sandy, my last question. Post Sandy, they redrew the flood maps.
Yes.
Did that add to the unbuildable property in the borough? Because we have a lot of water running through this town.
I think it did, and I'd have to compare the third round to the current round, but we definitely looked at the current flood requirements, the current floodplain, FEMA maps, special flood hazard areas, and we removed any site that was either entirely within the floodplain, or if so much of the site was in the floodplain to where there was less than 0.83 acres left outside of it, that happens to be the minimum lot size that they'll in the regulation, then we took the site out, too. So yeah, that's a great question. So that was factored in as well.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have anybody with a hand raised online?
There are no longer any virtual participants.
Board comments? Seeing none. Public comments? Any hands raised for a public comment? All right, so how do we proceed here, Mr. Stack?
If you're looking for a motion to adopt the Housing Element Fair Share Plan as submitted. Sorry to interrupt, yeah. But we also have a resolution that's already been prepared, so this would be a motion to approve and adopt the resolution on that one. So you'd be doing both at the same time. So that can be transmitted tomorrow to the governing body. So you'll have it.
I'll make a motion to approve the plan as submitted and with the resolution also.
To adopt.
Yeah, to adopt. Yeah.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. F.
Mr. Hawley?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. McGorja?
Yes.
Ms. DePasca?
Yes.
Mr. Joska?
Yes.
Ms. Majewski?
Yes.
Mr. Neff?
Yes.
Ms. Walter?
Yes.
Mr. Barrymore?
Yes.
Mr. Harada?
Yes.
We're good.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank
you. I can't tell you how much I learned over the last couple of weeks. I really kind of geeked out on this. But yeah, thank you again very, very much for your time.
Yeah, appreciate you.
And thank you again, everybody, for making the time to come to this special meeting. And with that, get out of the motion.
I will make a motion to adjourn, Mr. Johnson.
All in favor?
Brian, is that going to be on the website?
Since it will be added to the council agenda, I'm going to get those to the council.